All right, good afternoon, everybody. I call this meeting of the Property and Local Tax Division to order. There is barely a quorum. Can I have a motion to approve the April 1st, 2019 minutes?
So moved.
Representative Marquardt moves the minutes for April 1st, 2019. Any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Motion prevails and the minutes are approved. Well, I'm going to pause there for a second, and we're going to just take a minute to have a few brief comments and some introductions. My name is Andrew Carlson, and it's an honor to serve as chair of the Property and Local Tax Division. It's a little bittersweet due to the tremendous loss of Chair Diane Loeffler, who previously held this position. Her presence at the legislature will truly be missed. And also a special thanks to those that shared their kind words during last week's remembrance. So thank you for sharing. There she is. We also have a new member, Representative Gomez. Welcome. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for joining the Property and Local Tax Division.
My pleasure.
And then just a few kind of thoughts as we begin the session. The 2020 legislative session is going to move very, very quickly. It was quickly brought to my attention that we only have 6 regular meetings of this division, so we need to be as efficient as possible while still allowing adequate time to hear from testifiers and ask questions. If you have any work that you think may be coming before the Property Tax Division, please get your bills introduced as soon as possible. Chair Drazkowski. Did we want to just take a brief moment to address Ms. Schill's memo real quick? Chair Drazkowski?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and congratulations, Mr. Chair. Look forward to working with you this session.
Thank you.
I think many of us may have received a memo from Ms. Schill. I don't have it in front of me. Just kind of bringing forward 2 public documents the Minnesota Department of Revenue has produced, and those are recalculated local government aid and recertified local government aid and county program aid numbers. And so I sent an email yesterday, Mr. Chair, the Department of Revenue, asked them if they won't be here today, but you were so kind to say that we can address it very quickly and have them come before us so we fully understand, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Drazkowski. Just for just a quick point for the rest of the members. In short, the November 2019, there was an overage in distribution for LGA and CPA. This was a mistake that was made. We do intend to bring in the Department of Revenue to provide for some explanation as to that. A date yet to be determined, but I do want to be on the record in saying that we have every intention. This is a serious matter, and we tend to give that issue, that matter, the time it deserves before this committee. So. Yes, Chair Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could we? I mean, the forecast is coming soon. I think it might behoove us to act as quickly as we can so the committee can get a chance to discuss it before the forecast comes out, because it has implications for that, Mr. Chair.
Point well taken. We'll definitely move that along as quickly as possible. Okay. All right. So with that, let's get started with our agenda here. Ms. Stelton, hello. We thought it would be beneficial for members as well as those that have joined us today to spend just a few minutes in going through the changes that were made in dealing with local option sales tax. All 4 bills that we'll be hearing today are local option sales tax bills. So a brief presentation in terms of how we got to where we are, we felt was in order. So, Ms. Dalton, if you would please proceed with your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Pat Dalton with House Research, and I've been covering local sales taxes since about 1991. So, I actually do know the system.
I don't think your speaker's on.
Is my mic on?
Yeah. Oh, and members, you should have a copy of the PowerPoint in your packet.
I'm going to try to be brief, but really to understand kind of the tension and the struggles with local sales taxes that the legislature has faced it's important to recognize that there are two competing policy goals that the legislature is working with in relationship with its with local governments. And they're those two goals are in tension and at the heart of the issue of whether you allow local sales taxes or don't. And they are the issues of local government fiscal equity, being able to provide comparable services to your taxpayers at comparable costs, and local autonomy, letting the local governments and their constituents decide what to provide and how to fund it. The state has controlled imposition of local sales taxes since 1971. It was part of the Minnesota Miracle. At that point, the state began providing major local government aid in an attempt to provide some local fiscal equity. And as part of that program, a subdivision was written into the law that prohibited local governments from imposing or increasing any tax on income or sales. Why is this important? Because there's a pretty high correlation between a city having a high property tax base and a significant retail base in many cases. And so allowing cities to impose local sales taxes make it harder for the state to equalize local ability to pay for local government services.
Ms. Dalton, can you pull the microphone a little bit closer, please?
I guess
you can't.
Is that better?
That is better. Thank
okay.
you.
Turn the volume up.
Yeah, is the volume, do you have control of that?
Is that better?
That is better.
Okay. So, given that local sales taxes make it harder to meet goals of fiscal equity, why does legislature allow them? Well, one of the first reasons is regional projects need regional funding sources, and local governments often are doing regional capital projects. Some chairs and some legislatures have given the weight to the various trade-offs between the two policy goals, different weights over time. And frankly, it is often easier to allow a local government additional local funding sources than to find increased state revenues to fund some of those projects, particularly if the state is undergoing a budget crisis. So this chart, I think, is really very telling. If you notice, the very first if I can point to it. The very first bar is actually covering a period from 1972 to 1990. There were only four local sales taxes authorized during that time period: Rochester, Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Duluth. Throughout most of the 90s, there just weren't a whole lot. 1998 saw a fairly major spike. And then during the 2000s, you entered the era of Representative Abrams, for those of you who remember Representative Abrams, and he was very opposed to local sales taxes. As a matter of fact, if you notice, between 2000 and 2004, there was only one authorized. That was for a stadium. again, there were some allowed in the middle 2000s, and then I'm on the wrong page, so I'm looking at my wrong notes. In 2010, there were no local sales taxes authorized, and that's because at that time Representative Marquardt was chair, and he had enacted a provision that basically didn't allow local governments to spend any money to promote or hold a referendum for a local sales tax. What you will notice is there are some years that have no local sales taxes. Often those years we didn't have a tax bill. We did have a tax bill in 2017 and a tax bill in 2019, and you will notice we had a very large number of local sales taxes authorized at that time. and we will talk about that in a little bit. So we do have a statute in law. It's now 297A.99 after a recodification that basically governs the enactment of local sales taxes. It was enacted first in 1997 and was primarily used at that point just to standardize the legislative drafting and make sure that they were all being administered the same way. That's also true for the 1998 and 1999 changes. That is when we first started requiring local referendum. The original law did not specify when the local vote had to take place. Some cities were having the vote before they came to the legislature, some had it after they came to the legislature. Representative Davids essentially enacted the provision that said you got to come to the legislature, you have to go to the voters before you go to the legislature. As I said, there was a period when you weren't even allowed to spend money to promote or hold a referendum. And it was 2011 under Representative Davids that the requirement on the referendum coming first was enacted. There was a record number of referendum on the ballots at the 2018 general election, and the majority of them passed, 16 out of 22. There's some questions about why those passed. One thing might have been uncertain growth in state support for local projects. As you know, we have had difficulties passing bonding bills in recent history. And so there's been less money available at the local level for various projects. The other thing that may have contributed to the high passage rate is many of the referendum that were passed in 2018 bundled many projects together and often had very vague wording about what those projects were. Parks improvements, transportation improvements, sewer improvements. Often they were put together. Often there was no price put on any of those individual projects. The conference committee compromise last year basically said, well, everyone had been kind of playing by the rules that had been in place in 2018. So they essentially, the legislature essentially allowed all those 16 local sales taxes to be enacted. They did go back and actually require that some of those cities hold a second resolution, not a vote, but a resolution, actually enumerating the specific projects that were going to be paid for out of the local sales taxes. But the second part of that compromise is that they really tightened up the statute to give more control back to the legislature and increase information available to the voters. So what are the statutory changes that increased your control? First one was that they require the voter approval to occur only after the legislature has vetted the projects to be funded and have granted the authority. So you can't just kind of say, we're going to do all these wonderful good things, please vote yes. Now you guys get to vet those projects first. The law explicitly now says that the projects have to have a clear regional benefit beyond the jurisdictional limits. That has been a unwritten policy in the past, and it has been enforced more or less depending on who has been chair. But now it is part of the actual statute. It also requires that the initial city resolution enumerate no more than 5 projects to be funded. One of the things that the bill didn't do last year is it didn't define what a project is. There was some uncodified language about a specific project related to those cities who had to go back and redo a resolution, but that was not part of the statute. Local governments have to submit all of their resolutions and all their supporting documentation on regional significance to the legislature by January 31st. This means that you guys actually have the information that so you can start evaluating the projects. How does this improve local voter information and control? Local governments are now allowed to spend money to disseminate information, but only if each project and its cost is listed separately. So you can't do parks. You can't do parks and transportation for $20 million. You have to be specific about your project, and then you have to talk about how much each of those projects will cost. The information sent to the tax chairs on beneficiaries of each project will also be available to interested individuals in the local communities prior to the vote. And the most important thing is a separate question on each project to be funded must be held. And if the question for an individual project fails, that cannot be funded with the local sales tax. So if you want a local sales tax for improving this park, but you really don't care about that trail, you can vote yes for one and no for the other. You may make it a little harder for local sales taxes to pass. So what does that mean for you guys? Well, 20 cities and two counties filed required resolutions with the chairs and ranking minority members by the January 31st deadline. 22. As I said, the current statute does not define project. Many of the local governments use the definition of project that was included in the uncodified section in last year's bill, but you will notice that some did not and still have some more general descriptions for their projects. Regional significance was also not defined last year. I have gotten numerous calls from cities who have asked me, how do we prove regional significance? And I have to say my answer is always, it's kind of like pornography. We'll know it when we see it. This has actually been an ongoing issue. Actually, in 2004, the legislature required the Department of Revenue to do a study on how we define regional significance. And they came back with a report that basically said, we don't really know. And threw it essentially right back into the legislature's lap. So this will really kind of be the first time you guys get to actually look at how people are trying to define regional significance, and maybe through your actions here provide guidance on what you mean by regional significance. And then finally, the last thing I just wanted to show you is, as I said, there was no definition of project in the statute, but there was a definition of project contained in an uncodified subdivision last year. And this is the definition of specified capital project. Single building or structure, including infrastructure needed to safely access and use the building. Improvements within a single park or named recreational area. So you can't just say parks, you have to say this park. A contiguous trail. You can't say trails throughout the city, it has to be a trail. A contiguous segment of road or two or more contiguous segments of roadway, meaning they have to be touching, provided that all segments are listed. And a sanitary sewer, storm sewer, or water project in a contiguous geographic area served by the project, but it has to specifically describe the geographic area that is being served. So if you want to keep those in mind as you are listening to these projects, this might help you decide how people, whether they met the spirit of the law changes from last year. And with that, I will take any questions.
Yeah, thank you, Ms. Dalton. Any questions for Ms. Dalton? Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ooh, my mic was really loud. Thank you for the presentation. I was wondering if you might happen to know, according to your bar chart here, I kind of just did a quick addition. It looks like there's been 98 local option sales tax resolutions or provisions passed over the years. How many of those might you know that are still unexpired or are currently in effect at this time?
That's a good question. Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, and I should actually be carrying my thing, but I believe there are.
I could count them.
I want to say there's about 40 of them right now, not counting the county local sales taxes that are authorized by general statute.
Okay.
Representative Hertaus.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So of the 853 cities, then about 5% of the cities statewide have a local option sales tax.
Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hertaus, that's correct.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Chair Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Dalton, I'm curious. So we passed into law that it has to be regionally significant. So does that create a conundrum, because now it's codified in a law, it has to be regionally significant? Before it was a guideline, right, that we used here. So it's in law now. If a citizen wants to sue the city saying that project isn't regionally significant, does a court then say, well, the legislature said it was, so it must be? Or do they actually have standing in that case?
Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, Representative Drazkowski, that's a really good question. I don't know, because I can never say exactly what the courts are ever going to decide. The courts certainly give deference to legislative intent to the extent that this is something that they document to the legislature, and the legislature is going to, at least in theory, determine whether it is regionally significant or not. I assume that the courts are going to give some deference to that, but that's not clear. I mean, we won't know unless there is actually a court case.
Thank you. Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Dalton, remind me what mechanisms are in place to ensure that the cities are indeed using those sales tax for the regional improvement that they intended? Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, Representative McDonald, cities are audited every year on their revenues and expenditures. To the extent that they are using revenues for things that they aren't allowed to, that should show up in their audit.
Any other questions for Ms. McDonald? I'm sorry. you guys, no. For Ms. Dalton.
Like.
I know. Sorry about that. That's my rookie mistake for the first time. The rest will be perfect, I'm sure.
You're allowed at least one mistake.
Thank you, Representative McDonald. I do appreciate it. All right, then. Well, with that, we're going to get to our first bill for the day. House File 2931. May I have a motion to get Representative Lehman's bill before the committee?
Probably all LGS cities too.
I need a motion.
Mr. Chair. So move.
Very good. Representative Marquardt moves House File 2931 be laid over for possible inclusion in the division report. We have the bill before us. Representative Lehman, welcome. And I understand you have an amendment.
I do, Mr. Chair. Thank you so much for hearing us so early in the agenda. I have the A1 amendment to get this bill in a consistent shape with other local option sales tax bills that you'll be seeing today.
Excellent. Representative Lehman has an author's amendment labeled A1. Representative Marquardt moves the author's amendment. Does anybody have the amendment in front of them? Looks like everybody's got the correct documents. Ms. Dalton, we have a few of these amendments, these author's amendments before us today. If you could maybe just give us a reason as to why.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, once we realized we were going to be drafting a number of these, I sat down with my Senate counterpart and with our revisor, and we decided we would do standardized language for all of these, and unfortunately three of them have been drafted for pre-filing, and so they did not have the standardized language, and so that's why they have technical amendments. None of these amendments change the substance of the bills at all.
Okay, wonderful. Any discussion on the A1 amendment? Hearing none, those in favor of the motion say aye.
No.
Aye. Those opposed? The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Representative Lehman, please present your bill.
Okay, thank you so much. Well, I'm here today. First, I just have a little visual aid that is kind of fun. Some of you may have seen a video program on Twin City Public Television recently about a young man who was a graduate from Grand Rapids High School years ago. And he came back from living in the West Coast for a while, and he wanted to capture the ice rinks from around Minnesota, these wonderful, iconic, really, ice rinks. And so since 2006, he's been going around the state photographing ice rinks in their quiet state. No games are being played, just the beauty of the rink. And I just brought the book with me. The author happens to be in the audience. He's going to be photographing us for continued coverage. But because this is what we're here to talk about today. This is the Grand Rapids Civic Center. And civic centers are more than ice rinks. They're really community gathering places. And I have this book in my office if any of you hockey fans are interested in coming. And just maybe Representative McDonald, as a photographer, would be interested in seeing some of these photos. But I'm here today with the Grand Rapids City Administrator, Tom Pagel, and Grand Rapids City Councilor Rick Blake to talk to you about our request for Grand Rapids, who's never had a local sales tax option, to impose a 1% sales tax option for improvements to this iconic civic center. And that's all I'm going to say because these gentlemen know a lot more about the details. I'm going to turn it over to City Administrator Tom Pagel.
Thank you, Representative Lehman. Gentlemen, if you could introduce yourself for the record, please.
Chair Carlson, my name is Tom Pagel, P-A-G-E-L, City Administrator for Grand Rapids.
Chair Carlson, my name is Rick Blake, B-L-A-K-E, and I'm a city councilor in the city of Grand Rapids.
Welcome, gentlemen. Proceed with your testimony.
I'll start out by talking a little bit about the project briefly, and then I'll pass it on to Councilmember Blake, who will talk about the regional significance of the IRA Civic Center. The IRA Civic Center was built in 1962 by a group of volunteers. It was actually called the Itasca Recreational Association. And in 1968, the facility was given to the city of Grand Rapids. When the facility was constructed, it was constructed with a wooden bow truss roof system. And over the years, the wood in that bow truss system has decayed while you have moisture and dryness, freezing and thawing, to the point where we have had some members fail in the truss system. With you, you have a handout today. We have had two different consulting engineers look at the facility, in particular, John Ahmet, who's a registered professional engineer, has deemed that the trusses are in a dangerous condition and should be corrected. Signage should be put on the doors warning the public and employees of the significant undercapacity of the roof structure, and we have done that. And in his professional opinion, the West facility should not be used in winter months until our building official comes up with temporary measures. And our temporary measure is we remove every single snowfall that hits that roof, because the most recent failure occurred with 4 inches of snow on it. And then the final bullet point, which I just mentioned, is we should close it during a significant snow event. Fortunately, we haven't had to do that. So the replacement of the roof is one of the key needs that we need to do. We also have a refrigeration system that was built in 1968. It uses R22, and we are continuing to have many leaks with it. It's becoming very expensive to operate. To date, so far this winter, we've spent just a little under $13,000 on snow removal. We will be coming into the heavy, wet snow season of March, so that will continue to grow. And we've spent just a little bit under $15,000 on the R22 refrigeration. In addition to those items, we have ADA improvements that need to take place. And then we have HVAC systems that need to be upgraded that are, some of them, original from 1962. We have been investing in the Civic Center over the past 10 years. We've invested about $100,000 per year. So in 10 years, we've put $1 million into the facility. Very iconic. When people come to town, they come to town to see this arena, and they're in awe when they come in and they look at it. So with that, I'll pass it over to Council Member
Blake. Again, my name is Rick Blake. I'm a council person from Grand Rapids. And I want to emphasize the regional nature of this facility, and some of that's reflected in its name, as Tom mentioned, It's called the Itasca Recreation Association Civic Center. That's what the IRA stands for, being in Itasca County. It's a regional facility that serves a diverse set of public needs. Over 60% of the users are non-residents of the city of Grand Rapids. The Civic Center serves as Itasca County Emergency Shelter and is the evacuation facility for the Grand Rapids High School. And the Independent School District 318 is a very large school district, covers a huge area. Just over 60% of the students live outside the city of Grand Rapids. The city also has the Grand Rapids Amateur Hockey Association as a tenant. Nearly 65% of their members live outside the city of Grand Rapids. It's important to note that the University of Minnesota study estimated that sales and use tax would generate about 50 or 55% of the local sales and use tax would be generated by non-citizens of Grand Rapids. So this is truly a regional facility. A local sales and use tax would result in spreading the cost of the repairs across the population that actually utilizes the facility. Thank you.
Thank you both. As Mr. Blake was kind of providing some of the statistics in terms of the regional significance, I just want to draw members to the attention to the document they provided. The last page is a nice job of summarizing that regional significance kind of in a graphic form. So that was very helpful, I think, as part of our review and getting a sense of a summary in terms of the regional significance for the facility. So thank you for including that. Any other member questions? Representative Gomez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks for the presentation. I just, I don't know a ton about refrigerants, but you were talking about R22. That's kind of like an old refrigerant that is used frequently in like ice arenas. And so I'm wondering if you're planning to do like a retrofit or change the compound that you're using to make that happen.
Mr. Payne.
Chair Carlson, Representative Gomez. R22 actually can no longer be produced in the United States or imported, so the supply of it is starting to diminish, so the cost of it's going up. Its effect is impacting the ozone layers. So we also have what is called an east venue. It's more of a dry floor event venue, but also serves as a second sheet of ice in the wintertime. And what we would be doing is abandoning that R22, actually replacing all of the tubing that's underneath the floor that's starting to deteriorate, and interconnect it with the east venue, which is a different coolant.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Chair Jaskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Pagel, Mr. Blake, thank you. Thank you, Representative Lehman. So we have seen civic centers in the past in Minnesota. There's one down in southeastern Minnesota that's going in the red. And actually, we put bonding money into it. And part of the reason talked about 6 years ago was because it wasn't making enough money. So we bonded and we built it bigger, and now it's in the red again. So I'm curious, I think it'd be in the interest of your citizens, characterize, if you will, the operating budget of the Civic Center and how well it has or hasn't gone over the last, say, 10 years.
And Mr. Pagel, if you could speak into the microphone or speak up, please. We're still having a hard time hearing you.
Okay. Chair Carlson, Representative Jaskowski, we have about an $800,000 a year operating budget at the Civic Center. The $100,000 I had mentioned we've been investing per year actually has been coming out of the operating budget. So with that, we've been able to manage about a neutral budget. So, not profitable. But if we didn't have these large maintenance improvements, we would be profitable with the Civic Center, if you want to call it profit.
Chair Jaskowski?
I might add that it's a $3.4 million impact on the local economy, too.
Thank you. Chair Brumback.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. Chair Carlson, So the total then of your sales tax rate, when, if this passes, what would that be?
Chair Carlson, Representative, we would be requesting up to a 1% local sales tax to pay up to about $10.9 million. That would generate about $2.2 million a year, and so we could have this completed in under 6 years.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
So just maybe to restate that, your total sales tax, do you currently have an additional local sales tax operating? No?
Yeah,
so this would be the only one? Mm-hmm.
Correct.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Runbeck, the Grand Rapids has never had a local sales tax option, so this will be the first one. Okay. Yes.
Great, thank you.
Thank you. Further questions for Representative Lehman or testifier? Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And you mentioned an annual operating budget of around $800,000. Is that with or without local government aid that you're currently getting? And if you are getting LGA, how much revenue is being generated outside of the LGA payment?
Mr. Pagel.
Chair Carlson, Representative, we do not utilize any property taxes nor LGA to operate our civic center. It's strictly a revenue driven enterprise fund.
Representative Hertas?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No, my question was about your city budget.
City budget is around $7.2 million. I want to say our LGA is around $1.6 million.
Okay. Thank
you. Of that, 30% is debt service for street repairs.
All right.
Okay. Further member questions? Anybody from the audience wish to testify on this bill? Or on House File 2931, I should say. Okay. This was moved by Marquardt. Representative Marquardt renews his motion that House File 2931, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in division reports and that the bill be laid over.
Thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. See? Second mistake.
Closing comments.
Representative Lehman, I'm sorry.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. It's got to be tough on your first meeting. And so we're just honored to be your first request in your first meeting. Thank you so much for hearing us. This is a great project, and we just look for your positive affirmation that it's a worthy project. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen, for being here today. And I'll just repeat, Representative Marquardt renews his motion for House File 2931 as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in the division report, and that the bill be laid over. Next up, we have House File 3155. Representative Sundin, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. While we're setting up, I'm going to give you a little bit of a background or backdrop of what's going on in Carlton County.
Sure, let's just move your bill first, Representative Sundin. Representative Vang moves House File 3155 be laid over for possible inclusion in the division report. The bill is before us. Representative Sundin, please begin with your summary, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a little bit of a backdrop on what's going on in Carlton County and other counties. From Carlton County up to Pennington County, there's a pipeline that there's a tax issue going on where Enbridge Company is contesting their taxation on that line. And until that's completely settled, all those counties along that pipeline are in jeopardy of having to pay back Enbridge for some tax losses, according to them. But that puts a lot of question or lots of thought into the going forth for a levy for a jail system or any other improvements in the county. So we're looking at an alternative, and House File 3155 fits that bill. It allows Carlton County to impose a half-cent sales tax to fund a new law enforcement center and jail. Up to $40 million plus bond costs may be raised for the project, and the tax will expire at the earlier of 20 years after it's first imposed or when the necessary amount is raised. Just quickly to summarize, Carlton County local sales and use tax authorized sales and tax authorization of a half cent The use of sales tax revenues is for the $40 million Noon Law Enforcement Center, and it provides for the bonding authority so they can go ahead with the financing of it, and then, of course, the sunset on the tax as well. I have with me Commissioner Marv Bodie and Sheriff Kelly Lake, and they can flush out the details on this effort.
Welcome to both of you. If you could please introduce yourself and state your names for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Kelly Lake, Carlton County Sheriff.
And I'm Marv Bodie, County Board Chair.
Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee for your time today. As Commissioner Sundin or Representative Sundin said, we're looking for the 0.5% to fund a new jail. Carlton County has a strong history of providing quality services to our citizens, and at this time, we're looking to give our citizens a voice and a choice on how to pay for a new facility. Due to a variety of factors, we're one of the highest property tax counties in the state. Some factors are our aging population. We have one of the highest population of service-related disabled veterans per capita in the state. We also have thousands of acres of non-taxable tribal trust lands that need county services but provide no property taxes or federal PILT. And we're losing, as Representative Sundin said, we're losing significant tax value due to the utility tax cases. We've been working for the last 7+ years in studying the public safety needs of the county through consultant studies and working with our criminal justice partners like the judges, court admin, and law enforcement to come up with the best plan and processes possible. Placing the jail is going to be a great burden to our citizens, and we want to give the people a choice on how to pay for it. I turn things over to Sheriff Lake to give project details.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you hear me all right when I'm at the center, or do I need to move over?
I can hear you okay. Can everybody else hear? Right. Yeah, the closer I think you can get to the mic, the better.
Okay. Push Commissioner Bodie out of the way.
There you go. There you go.
All right. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. As sheriff, my top priority is public safety in Carlton County for our citizens and also for our visitors that are visiting Carlton County. Our situation in our jail right now, our jail was built in 1979. It was quickly added on in 1981. I'm not sure the backstory exactly, although I know that our jail is over 40 years old. The National Institute of Corrections has determined that the average lifespan of that jail when it was built was 25 to 30 years. And obviously we have far surpassed that. Our staff, our maintenance, all of our county has done a very good job trying to maintain the current facility that we have and get the most life out of it, but it is nearing its end of life. In fact, on January 28th, we received, of this year, we received a letter from the Minnesota Department of Corrections, a sunset authorization, which states that after July 31st of 2023, our jail facility will no longer be authorized to hold incarcerated persons. So we knew the age of our facility, obviously, and have been diligently planning for the last 5 years for the future of our jail. As sheriff, this jail component is very important to the public safety of our citizens. So we know that we wanted to do this right. We want to right-size the jail, and we want to make sure that we're looking at all aspects, not just the jail, the bricks and mortar, but actually the system efficiencies. And so we have been studying, like I said, comprehensively, two different studies. We have also sent a group out to the National Institute of Corrections to the planning of new institutions. So we have been, you know, going through this process for quite some time to make sure that we can do this right. We know this is going to be a facility that's going to be a large burden on the taxpayers, but it's also something that's very important for the safety of our citizens. For the last several years, in the last 12 years, through our studies, we have noticed that our female offender population in our jail has doubled. And this is not anything that is new to Carlton County. We are seeing this in the region, in the state, and actually nationwide with a number of female offenders that are now incarcerated. So we've also recognized that there's been a service gap in the programming that has been afforded to female inmates versus our male inmates. In Carlton County, we're part of an Arrowhead Regional Corrections Consortium, and there is a facility that is called the Northeast Regional Corrections, and that is a 144-bed male-only facility that is in St. Louis County, but we partake in that through our Arrowhead Regional Corrections. As part of that Arrowhead Regional Corrections, the female offender program has 10 beds, and that is available to all of the five counties. So right there, you know, we notice that there is a gap in services. We also know through best practices that the programming afforded to males and females, it needs to be specific to the gender. So in fact, Minnesota law, statute 241.70, requires parity in male and female offender programming. What it states is that adult women that are charged with and convicted of crimes must have substantially equivalent programming that is offered to their male counterparts. And that programs for female offenders shall be based upon the special needs of female offenders. And through our studies, and we know that this is not happening in our county, although we are trying to equalize that within our county. The structure and the size of our jail is not allowing that as optimally as we would like. And we know in reaching out regionally to our partners that there is not the female offender programming available either. We have, over the last 18 months, specifically trying to narrow down the female offender programming, what that might look like, and also just looking at the needs, both within our county and also trying to reach out regionally. We have received report for a regional female offender program in which we would then bring in sentenced females into our facility to provide this programming that they are not able to get in other areas in the region, throughout the state. Really, there is one program at Shakopee, and that's for the prison population, the female offenders. Otherwise, there is not a lot of that in the state to provide that equal programming to the females. So that is a gap that we have recognized the need. It's a gap we believe we can fill in part of our new jail. So we, in speaking with this over the last 18 months, we have received support from the 6th Judicial District Chief Judge Sally Tarnowski, who has also, through her work in sentencing female offenders, have noticed that there is not a lot of options to be able to send female offenders to for programming. We've also received support from the Fond du Lac Band Tribal Council Chairman, Kevin Dupie, as well as other band leadership. Carlton County, part of Carlton County encompasses the Fond du Lac Reservation as well. So we do see a Native American population. We work very closely with the tribe as far as trying to afford, you know, programming within our jail facility, and would continue to do that and strengthen that for the female offender program. We also received support from St. Louis County, which is our neighboring county, also a member of our Arrowhead Regional Corrections. And through our Arrowhead Regional Corrections, they have also noted that there is a lack of the female offender programming. And the one 10-bed facility that we have available to us in the region is actually not a secure jail facility. It is a step-down program. It's got a great program. We've been in conversations with them as far as how we could partner together if we were able to provide more female offender program in a more secure jail setting such as our new facility. And we would then partner with them. And they are more, they have more community-based, and it would be more of a step-down program once someone is out of secure confinement. I believe it is critically important. Again, my priority is public safety. I think the jail is obviously a big component of that public safety. But even bigger component of that, along with the jail, is our programming that we provide. Because we know that our inmate population that is in our jail is going to be going out and released into our community. And we want to make sure that they are afforded the programming that will make them succeed when they get out of custody, when they're released. And that will help, hopefully, with lower recidivism rates, but make them more productive members of society as well. And I know it is also public safety. You know, we're not in the business of making money, so we know that this is borne a lot on the taxpayers. So that I think it's critical that we give our taxpayers a voice on how they want to pay for the new facility. And we believe that through this local option sales tax, it would give them, you know, the voice and the choice on how they want to pay for it. Okay. Thank you for your time. I do appreciate it.
Yeah, Mr. thank you Chair. For your testimony today. Quick clarifying question before we get to member questions. The tax will be in effect for how many years do you anticipate?
20 years okay. is what we had anticipated, the half-cent sales tax.
Okay, thank you. Representative Hewitt, you had a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sheriff Lake, how many times have you hit full census in the jail currently?
Sheriff Lake.
Pardon me.
Full capacity. What has been your full, how many times have you been hitting that?
So we have a 48-bed facility. Recently, we have been average daily population about 26. But as far back as 2003, we had been boarding out inmates from our facility. The highest amount we have boarded out is 25 to 30 a day. But again, our population has been down as of late.
Representative Hewitt.
Mr. Chair, Sheriff Lake, one last question. And I know that there's a big burden. You've been in a sheriff for 15 years and probably seen the change on mental health in jails.
Yes.
And you've had to adapt. I'm sure yours wasn't designed for what we've seen coming. With the changes, will this help you serve that population in a safe and efficient manner?
Absolutely. Sure. When our jail was built in 1979, it was a linear design that was quickly outdated with its design and was not designed. It was built for 24 beds, which was the supports, like the programming space. We have one small room that is about the size of the center of your chairs. That is our only programming space. Our medical facility, same thing. It is about the size of a closet where we're able to conduct some medical. So part of our plan is to increase our programming capacity to be able to bring that in, the mental health. We've been trying to do things with what we have. We've been using telemental health, but certainly we would be able to expand upon that if we had the space and the facility to be able to do that.
Representative Hewitt.
Mr. Chair, one last question, and I'll be done here. Just curious, will this make you more of a regional asset to the area up there than what you are right now? I mean, will this add beds to the region too?
Sheriff Lake.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Absolutely. As I stated before, we've noticed that there is an absolute lack of female offender programming. We've noticed again, you know, you need to provide specific programming to meet the female offender needs versus the males. It's in statute that we are supposed to be providing this. And by and large in the region, it is not. Statewide, there is a lack of it. So absolutely, we intend on being able to provide that to other counties within our region where they could send female offenders and then they would get some programming very specific to their needs and would be able to return to their home counties and be more productive members of society.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Sheriff Lake and Mr. Bodie, thank you for coming today. Sheriff Lake, earlier in your testimony, you talked about right-sizing this facility. Can you kind of define that and how it impacts the county as well as the region? Are you going to be thinking that we really are in follow-up with the previous question from other counties as well?
Sheriff Lake?
So, yes, we would like to, when we build our jail, we don't want to open it up the first day we know we will have space because we want this facility to last us hopefully 40 to 50 years. But we know when we open it up, there will be some beds available. And we know that there is a definite need for a female offender program in the region. So it would be our intent to really work very closely with our regional partners, the counties surrounding us, and seeing what the need is. We know in our meeting we've already had with St. Louis County officials that they average 8 or 9 sentenced females at any given time. They are the largest county in our region, so we know generally what some capacity could be for having a female offender program. And in our design of our facility, we would build that as such so that we could, it would be flexible with it to be able to have that additional female offenders brought in. Having said that, when I talk about right sizing, we don't want to build our jail in the hopes that we would be making revenue or that we would be making money off of people, because that is not what our intent is at all. It is to fill a need that we know exists, and in a new facility we would have room to do that initially.
Yes, Representative Piesberg.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and just a follow-up comment and maybe a cautionary comment. One of the local counties that I represent built a jail anticipating that it would be needed for other regional areas, so forth. And now they're finding that the reimbursement from the other counties is actually less than what it costs them to operate. And so you may want to talk to other counties to see about reimbursement rates and negotiations as you pull forward, because you do want to make sure that this is also financially viable into the future as well. And that's the final comment. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Brumback.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sheriff Lake, the $40 million cost, first of all, there's not too many specifics about the, what the plan looks like or the build, I'm just wondering when that will come. And, having sat on capital investment for a couple of terms, $40 million sounds like a lot of money. And I'm just curious, maybe that's what jails go for these days, but when will you get closer to knowing what the real cost will be?
Sheriff Lake.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Yes, excellent question. And we would have loved to have been able to provide a lot more detailed information, but we also, just on our January 27th commissioners meeting, approved for a request for proposal to be sent out so that we could get architectural and engineering design so that we would have more detailed information on exactly how and what is going to be in that and what it would cost. And unfortunately, yes, some jails can go for $25 to $40 million, depending on the size and what you have in it. So that is, they're not cheap endeavors. That's why we want to do it right and serve our needs for many, many years to come.
Thanks. Thank you. And yeah, can I have a follow-up, please?
Yes.
Just wanted to ask about the language in both of these proposals that we're looking at, where it basically does not give a finite expiration date on the tax. It says, it may expire, and obviously that must mean it may not expire. So in this case, the extra funds would go to the general fund. So I'm just wondering, is that becoming kind of a standard way of approaching these?
Yes. Ms. Dalton, perhaps, can quickly respond.
Mr. Chair, Representative Runbeck, if you look on page 2, lines 2.8 through, essentially that entire subdivision 4, the tax does expire at the earlier of 20 years after the tax is first imposed, or when the county determines it has received the $40 million necessary for the project plus any bond costs. The only caveat on that is because of some other provisions in law, they can only start or end on a calendar quarter. So if there's any extra money needed because of a calendar quarter ending, that money goes into the general fund. But it does expire no later than 20 years after first imposed.
Thank you, Ms. Dalton.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, and just a quick follow-up then, is that what the reference to 297A.99 then is referring to, Ms. Dalton?
Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, if you're talking about the reference to 297A.99 subdivision 12 on lines 14 and 15, that is what that is talking about.
Mm-hmm.
297A.99 subdivision 3 paragraph F up on line 13 of page 2 is referencing another provision that was put in last year that basically says if a county if a local government kind of fudges on this and starts collecting a little extra that they shouldn't have,
mm-hmm.
that money actually goes to the state general fund instead of to the county or city general fund. So there's no benefit to a local government for letting it run longer than they absolutely need to, because the money will go to the state, not to the local government.
Perfect. Thank you.
Okay. Just members, as the official timekeeper, we do have two more bills before us, and we have about a half hour left. So if we can keep our comments brief so we can move on. Representative Gomez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just for some context for this conversation, I wonder if Ms. Dalton can talk to us a little bit more about the requirement that was codified in 2019 about the regional significance of projects that qualify for being funded by local option sales taxes. I haven't ever sat on the Capitol Committee, so I guess I'm a little bit like, I don't really understand where that line is between something that should be funded through bonding and something that is appropriate to be funded through this tool. So I don't know if somebody can provide me a little context.
Ms. Dalton, you want to take a stab at that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Gomez, this gets back to the regional significance is in the eye of the beholder. There have been attempts to get to that in previous years, most notably in 2004. We've never had a really good definition. There is actual language in the statute that says you have to document how this is serving people outside the city and what percentage of the service is going to be provided to people outside of the city. But this is really kind of an issue for you guys to kind of flesh out and maybe even change the statute to tighten it up after this year.
Thank you. All right. Representative Jaskowski, you want to close us off here with a last member question?
I will. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Sheriff Lake or Blake?
Lake.
Lake. Sheriff Lake. One of the things I've struggled with is I've seen some of the counties in my region, the southeastern region of the state, come up where the Department of Corrections is telling them they have to build a new jail. And it happened in my county, Wabasha County, 12 years ago. Now we've got a 72-bed jail that's got 8 to 10 people in it. And we've got capacity in all the counties around us. And this is probably for a different committee. But I think here in Minnesota, we have to start to have the discussion because, and no offense, Sheriff, but the public safety industry in each county gets together and says, no, we're going to have our own. And they don't work together. Now, I don't know what's happened up by you. I hope you've gone around and actually talked with St. Louis and Aiken and Pine, who I assume all have jails too. But it's compelling the discussion about actually having a woman's facility in your county and making that a regional woman's facility that they can all benefit from. But then I see in your proposal you got your men's facility there too, which is an inefficient way to put a facility together because they did that in Wabasha. And so, and it's not working out real great for them. Houston County did the same thing. I don't know how many they have in theirs, but it's way under housed according to what the size is. And now Winona County's gonna build one. And so, members, this is happening all around the state. It's costing our taxpayers all kinds of money. Representative Gomez, whether it's this tax or whether it's a property tax, which ostensibly sometimes decision makers in the county will like to put the tax forward that points to them last. And this one would seem to probably point to them last. So that might be members why we're seeing in front of the property tax committee. I don't know. But I would just encourage you, Sheriff, and your other sheriffs to break out of the model of the sheriff and the county attorney and the probation people and the jailers getting together and, you know, we're going to have this baby in our county because it has to be here. It's our county. It's our facility. We got to work together because the taxpayers are getting run over. And I see some elements in your proposal that start to do that. So I'm really encouraged by that. At the same time, I don't know how regional it is. So I just challenge you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Drazkowski. Okay. Any members from the audience want to briefly testify on behalf of the bill? Okay, closing comments, Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. You know, it's easy to say lock the guy up and throw the key away. It's easy to say lock that woman up and throw the key away. But I think the programming that's included in Sheriff Lake's plan here it has a strong merit, you know, for reforming some of the female offenders. And I'd really like to thank the county board for thinking outside the box. They are limited on the property tax burden throughout the county, and I think this is the right way to go, and I thank you for your time and attention.
Yes, thank you for coming to testify today. With that, Representative Vang renews her motion that House File 3155 be laid over for possible inclusion in the division report and that the bill be laid over. Next up, thank you. Thank you all for being here today. Let's see. Oh, yes, Representative Lewick, presenting House File 2956. Come on down. And while they are approaching the testifier table, can I get a motion to move? We got a motion from Representative Petersburg. Thank you very much. Representative Petersburg moves House File 2956. Be laid open. I'm sorry?
And the amendment.
Okay, we're just going to move right into that. Moves House File 2956 and the amendment be laid over for possible inclusion in the division report. We have the bill before us, and we got the amendments. So let's see. We got to take a motion on the amendment here. Does anybody have the amendment in front of them, first of all? Should look very familiar. Any discussion on the amendment? Hearing none, all those in favor of the amendment say aye. 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 Those opposed? Motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Representative, you could please proceed with presenting your bill.
Thank you, Chair Carlson and members for hearing this bill. What this bill would do would put before the voters ultimately a half-cent sales tax to make some much-needed improvements in the wastewater treatment facility within the city of Cross Lake. It does in fact have regional significance because if you're familiar with our part of Minnesota, north central Minnesota, we've got 36 miles, square miles that make up the city of Cross Lake. Over a third of that is water. It sits in the Pine River watershed, or more often referred to as the Whitefish Chain, which empties into the Mississippi River. So if you reside down in the metro area, we get first look at the water that that you see down here. So the regional significance of this has to do with clean water, ensuring that all the way down to Mississippi we deliver clean water. I'll turn it over to Mayor Nevin and City Administrator Linus. They can get into the details. You have a comprehensive package there with charts and figures and maps and stuff. I realize we're going to try to keep this as short and sweet as possible, Chair.
Welcome, gentlemen. If you could please each introduce yourself for the record and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Mike. My name is Mike Lyonis, L-Y-O-N-A-I-S. Can everybody hear me?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mike is administrator to the city. I'm David Nevin, N-E-V-I-N, mayor.
John Andrews, A-N-D-R-E-W-S, city council, Cross Lake.
Okay, thank you. In your materials is included a map. The cover page of the materials is a map. If you're not familiar where Cross Lake is, it's in north central Minnesota. It's represented by the dot in the upper left-hand corner on your map. the front page shows the city of Cross Lake, and the most notable feature you see is blue. That's water. As Representative Luick said, about a third of our total surface area is covered by the Whitefish Cross Lake chain. There's actually 14 lakes that make up that chain. Yeah. And that body of water represents the Corps of Army Engineers Reservoir, which ends up in St. Paul, ultimately. Our goal is to continue to protect our most valuable asset, which is our water resource. We can live with a lot of things. We live without a lot of things. We can live without a cell phone. We can live without texting. But you can't live without water. All of this water eventually ends up in the Mississippi River. The city of St. Paul takes 70 to 80% of its water, tap water, out of the Mississippi River. So eventually, the water in Cross Lake ends up in St. Paul, and it ends up in the Gulf of Mexico. So clearly, it has a much wider impact than just the city of Cross Lake. We're a small city. Our permanent population is about 2,200 people. So that population grows tenfold or more in the summer months. And we have to provide infrastructure to support that level of population, whether it's roads, and right now it's wastewater infrastructure. And that's what we're asking this be applied to. We also, one of our goals is to maintain our tourist economy. Right now we have extremely high quality lakes. It's a very desirable area to come to vacation, to boat, to fish, to snowmobile in the winter, and everything that involves water. So we want to protect that. Not only do we get visitors from our surrounding communities, but we get visitors from every county in the state, and pretty much every state in the nation, and even people from overseas. So there's a huge local, regional, state, and larger benefit to make sure we continue to protect this resources. Why did we choose the three projects that are in your materials? The projects are already close to our existing infrastructure, so it's economical to do, and we'll get a lot of bang for our buck. We have a high level of commercial and residential interest, and our goal is to remove additional septic systems from our lake shores and protect those highly sensitive environmental areas. We also need to find an alternative to process biosolids. For those of you that understand the wastewater treatment process, the byproduct is biosolid, and we need to do something with it. Right now, we pump it into a truck and we haul it to another facility to process for us. We'll eventually lose the ability to do that. Right now, our product is being dumped into a reed bed in a neighboring community and eaten by what's been deemed an invasive species of reeds. So what we're looking at this summer, we budgeted for, is a pilot to figure out how to better treat those biosolids. We know the technology will work. We just need to scale it for our application. What we're looking at doing is further removing the liquid from the wastewater, drying it out, and then using it for ground cover at our local landfill. So let's talk about the project areas.
And gentlemen, for the sake of having one more, if we can, I don't know, 5-10 minutes tops.
Okay, perfect.
And that would include member questions too, so.
Sure, I'll wrap it up. So if you look at your map, I've outlined a green area at the top with the green box. That's what we're terming the moonlight service area. The amount we hope to raise through a 0.5% sales tax is $1.12 million. And that's right on the northerly edge of what will be our existing sanitary sewer system. The yellow highlighted area is the Daggett Lake service area. The amount we hope to provide through sales tax is $1.68 million. When we connect these, we need to do some work on our plant that we talked about earlier. We're looking at funding this through a combination of local assessments, some tax levy, and a local sales tax. We hope to generate, or we believe we'll generate $4.8 million over the next 15 years. Okay? And again, in your materials is a citywide wastewater study. We wanted to know which areas would benefit the most from our efforts and which areas we would never go to. Those are outlined in your materials. The The last part of your materials is a local option sales tax study performed by the Extension Service of the University of Minnesota that documents roughly 80% or more of our retail sales come from outside of Cross Lake. So what we're asking for is help to pay for that system so we can benefit not only our local residents, but to share the burden with those that come to visit us. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. And members, also members of the audience too, the handout we have is unfortunately in black and white, but you can find a color version of this on the website too. So in terms of the color coding and so forth, you can view that on the website. I got a quick question. It's Mr. Is it Mike? Mike Linus?
Yes.
You got the three projects within this proposal. Are they interconnected, or could one be approved and not the others? How do they move forward? How would that work?
We intend.
Yeah, if one gets approved and one doesn't, what would you do?
Whether or not it's approved, we intend to do them.
Okay.
The question is, how do we ease up that burden on our taxpayers? Because most of our usage comes from outside of our area, and we have to deal with that. And so whether we get sales tax or not, we still see a need to go move forward in some way with all of those projects.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate that. Member questions? Yes, Chair Marquardt.
Yeah, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And I don't know if this is for Representative Lewick, and I'm not real familiar with this, but has the city applied through, like, the Public Facilities Authority or through bonding or something for the sewer and water? Or is there, are you on a list of any sort?
Yes, Representative Lewick.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt, another chair amongst the group. I'll let City Administrator answer that, but they've been very aggressive in trying to expand that system.
Sure, and that's a good question. If you're at all familiar with Cross Lake, one thing you'll recognize is probably roughly 65% of our taxable market value comes from non-residents. And so what happens is we don't look favorable for funding from state agencies because they look back at us and say, well, you have higher than normal property values. You can pay for it yourself. The reality is over 80% of our activity comes from outside of Cross Lake. So we're looking for creative ways to try to pay for that.
Thank you.
Another question. Excuse me, Mr. Chair. Could I add something to that? The regional benefit of this, in my mind, is that, you know, we've got some well-to-do people that live on the lake. We entertain a lot of people on the lake. We invite them in here. But we also, in the region, have got a very strong fire and a very strong law enforcement department. And so the part of this sales tax to offset the sewer is just to help us out on all the other avenues, too. We just need some help. You know, there's 2,000 of us that got to pay the deal. So that's all I wanted to add.
I appreciate that. As a former city council member, I, got to get it all done. Okay. Anybody else here to testify? Closing comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And be very quick. Mayor Nevin makes a good point. That city swells to 15, 20 times its size through the summer. And so you've got all these other things that city has to take care of as far as public safety and those types of things. It's a relatively small group of permanent full-time residents that have to foot that bill. An excellent question from Chair Marquardt on the dichotomy of having a lot of property that's not homesteaded and some other things that can skew the formula for other types of government aid and qualifications. So with that, again, I just want to stress this is extremely environmentally sensitive area. It has a huge regional significance for the entire state all the way to the Iowa border. So thank you, members and chair.
Thank you, gentlemen, for taking the time to be with us today. With that, Representative Petersburg renews his motion that House File 2956, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in the division report and that the bill be laid over. Next, we have House File 3134. Representative Zhang, you're up. As a member of the committee, you get the privilege of moving your own bill. you have an amendment too. Representative Zhang moves that House File 3134 be laid over for possible inclusion in the division report. We have the bill before us. Representative Zhang, I understand you also have an amendment.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, I do have the A1 amendment to put it in form as the other bills that we have today.
Excellent. Excellent. Representative Zhang moves that the author's amendment labeled A1. Everybody have the amendments? Should look familiar by now. Any discussion on the amendments? Hearing none, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Representative Zhang, please present your bill.
Hello, Chair and members. Would like to introduce House File 3134. It's a local option sales tax to allow the city of Oakdale, which is located in the East Metro, northeast of where 3M is located. It's my district, Representative Lilly's district, and I think Senator Uyghur is also here. And allow a 0.5% local sales tax to fund $50 million for a public works facility and $12 million for a police station. And I'd like to hand it over for the mayor to speak more on this.
Very good. Thank you, Representative.
Welcome. If you can please introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Paul Reinke, R-E-I-N-K-E. I'm the mayor of Oakdale. Been the mayor for 3 years. Prior to that, was a council member for 12 years. Let me also introduce or say special thanks to Representative Lilly and Zhang for authorizing our bill. A couple of people to introduce behind me that are critical. Councilors Zabel and Councilors Olson. Councilors Swedberg and Ingebrigtsen could not be here because of work conflicts. But then I also want to introduce Craig Dawson, our interim city administrator. Chelsea Peterson, our director of administrative services. Bill Sullivan, our chief of police. Brian Bachmeyer, our director of public works and city engineer. And, of course, Senator Uyghur as a support. So Oakdale, northeast corner of the 494-694 loop, first organized as a township in 1858. Fast forward. Currently, we have 29,000 residents, 12,000 households, 12,000 jobs, roughly 11.3 square miles. We're long and slender, as you can see on our map, 6 miles north and south, roughly 2 miles east-west. The neighboring communities, we share 7 boundaries with other communities. And maybe the most interesting piece about the significant geographical significance is that I-94 to our southern part has 113,000 trips a day. I-694, bisecting our community north-south, has roughly 85,000 trips a day. You can imagine maybe or recall back in 2018, we have one of our main water mains heading east break, causing a stoppage of anybody transferring or going along that I-694, and so that the our people, our public works group, repaired that that facility in 6 days. And then finally, Highway 36, also up on the north side, is about 12,000 trips a day. You know, there's two projects that we are asking for your consideration to allow us to bring to our public, our residents, a local area sales tax. The first one being the Public Works project, $15 million. Right now, our existing Public Works has been in place for 35 years with two expansions. The staffing levels, the equipment stock, have grown significantly over that time. The building's too small for the necessary equipment to be housed indoors. Right now, I've taken some flack from my residents about our expensive equipment sitting outside being dealt with the rain and snow. Locker rooms are not ADA compliant and are much too small for staff. The internal equity between our female and male employees is a concern. It's being dealt with, but it needs to be dealt with much better. Finally, for the Public Works, is that the air quality. It is located, our facility is located on a high point of a wetland, and there currently are mold and moisture issues through the, at one point was the very innovative underfloor ducting, which now is containing water and needs to be, that facility needs to be moved. Also, the exhaust fumes, diesel particulate matters are present, and these do create health concerns for our employees.
The other project as a standalone is the police facility. That's a $12 million ask, and I think you've got additional detail in your materials. High points, though, is that it's been occupied for nearly 30 years, and our staffing levels have nearly doubled. It's inefficient, officers having to make 4 to 5 different stops on different floors during their shift in order to do their business. Vehicles, majority of them are stored outdoors right now. So on the minus 20, or the 6 inches of snowfall and the shift change and the sensitive equipment that's in those vehicles are being deteriorated quicker. Security concerns. Our evidence transfer has to go through public areas. Our witness areas are unsecured from the rest of the officers. Yes. And the personal spaces, again, the internal equity between the male and female officers and personnel, there are currently shared lockers and cubbies for the personal effects. These two facilities are exciting solutions to solve. They are both urgent needs, not wants. You know what? Let me just go through a couple of things, and then we'll take care of your time.
By all means.
The geography, like I mentioned, is terrific because it's unique. And we're providing these services. We have and we will continue providing these quality services and programming for our residents, but also because we have grown and we are very enticing as a community, it becomes a magnet for other non-residents too. So example, if you think about 29,000 residents, maybe 10,000 of them, for the latest federal data, are non-residents who are working in Oakdale. Also be thinking, in through the U of M Extension Office, that roughly 15,000 non-residents are shopping in Oakdale. So approximately 37% of all of retail sales are from non-residents. Arguably, Oakdale's population is nearly 40,000, even though it only has 29,000 residents. We have another activity coming through town, the Gold Line Bus Rapid Transit. There's been some recent news that you've read, I'm sure, through the Met Council and the federal FTA. Those things, I think, will be overcome, and that will receive a rating of medium or medium high. But when that does, there are two stations in Oakdale that will be surrounded by major retail development at the Helmo station, which is on the far east, and the other Greenway station is closer to Landfall, which is our neighboring community. We will be, or our Oakdale Public Works will be responsible for maintaining 1.5 miles of that dedicated guideway once it's constructed. Finally, recreation. We have a 480-acre park system, 29 community parks, and a 220-acre Oakdale Nature Preserve. Between the Summerfest activities, the special events, the activity programming, our facilities, and it's a pleasure to invite all these other people to join and participate, but it is a drain on the resources. These local option sales tax and use, we think, is a very appropriate and equitable way to share the financial cost for these locally provided and regionally significant services.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Members, any pressing questions for Oakdale? I have a quick one. Are you pursuing bonding for either of these projects this year?
Chair, thank you for the question. No, we're not.
Okay. Yes, Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment. It certainly does take a village to get a bill in front of the committee to local option sales tax. So
thank you.
Well, good showing.
Well said. Any members from the audience wish to testify on behalf of this bill? Seeing none, Representative Zhang, closing comment.
I'll be quick as the committee's coming to an end here. Thank you all, and thank you to all the members from the city of Oakdale to come here. It really does take a village. When I was in high school, Lily and this guy, the mayor, was entered into city council my first year of high school, and so it just...
Representative Zhang, how old are you?
I grew up admiring all of them, and so thank you. We'd like to include move for it to be laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you.
Wonderful. Okay. Thank you all for taking the time to be with us today. We appreciate your testimony. With that, Representative John renews his motion that House File 3134, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in the division report. And with that, the bill is laid over. Thank you, everybody, for being with us today and keeping to the agenda and keeping us on time. We'll do this again shortly. With that, we are adjourned.